Hey, everybody. Very happy you were able to check out the podcast. Before we get to my guest, who's someone you'll know very, very well, and you watched on TV for quite a long time, I have more stand-up gigs coming up October 24th to the 27th. I'm going to be in Naples, Florida, Off the Hook Comedy Club. You got to come because it's Off the Hook. You go online to get tickets, Off the Hook Comedy Club, October 24th to the 27th. November 1st and 2nd, I'm going to be at Laugh Boston in Boston, Mass., my stomping ground. November 1st and 2nd, Laugh Boston. And then I'm going to be in Arizona the week after that. And the week after that, I'm going to be back in Florida at Fort Lauderdale at the Hard Rock. You can go on my website and see all my tour dates, but the most immediate ones coming up are October 24th to the 27th at Off the Hook. And Naples, Florida, and November 1st and 2nd at Laugh Boston Comedy Club. And always please leave comments on iTunes about the show. It always helps. And my guest this week, Frankie Muniz, star of Malcolm in the Middle. Very, very excited to have him on. Really great guy. He's really done a lot of work since then. And he's got a cool movie out. And he's got a side business that you'll find interesting. So enjoy, Frankie. Thank you for checking out the podcast this week. And hopefully see one of my gigs on the road. Again, go to my website to see my whole tour schedule right now. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. I was very excited to see the opportunity to interview my next guest. I have, since he was a child actor, but just all the way straight through to today, I think he's a really terrific actor and someone's very honest in his acting and just someone that I think really brings a lot to the screen. It's Golden Globe winner from Malcolm in the Middle, Frankie Muniz, and he is in a new film out right now called The Black String, which is available on DVD, digital, and on demand. And it's a horror film. And there's a shot of you with like a knife in your belt. It's a whole other. I never expected you to see you like that. It's kind of a cool image. Nice to have you, man.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell people a little bit about the film. I know it's sort of this thriller and your character meets a woman. You play this character Jonathan who hooks up with somebody, sort of the sexy woman, and you get ill. And where does it go from there? What's going on in the movie a little bit?
Yeah, well, I actually end up, I call like one of those 1-900 kind of singles hotlines or those sex hotlines. Mm-hmm. And I meet a woman on there, and I meet with her in person, and we have a, you know, interesting night. Cut to the next morning, I wake up and she's gone, and I have this crazy rash all over my body, and I go to the doctors, and everybody's just kind of telling me, nah, it's not a big deal, or they don't believe me that I went out with this girl, or like everybody's like doing everything they can to go against kind of what I'm saying. So it ends up I start looking for this girl to try to find some answers of what happened, and I end up thinking that there's some like cult or crazy plot to get me or kill me. And the more I get into it, the more crazy I seem to my friends and family and everybody. And it keeps going kind of from there. But it's pretty, I'm not explaining it, like it's intense the whole way through because you don't know if Jonathan's telling the truth or if he is crazy or whatnot. And you're kind of left questioning that the whole movie, and you're just anxious to find out in the end.
So that's sort of the thriller aspect of it, and kind of it's almost like a movie within a movie in a way, right? Like, is this a dream or is this real kind of thing, right? That's happening to the character.
And you know, I call it more of like a psychological thriller. It's not the kind of movie that things are jumping at you and it's going to scare you. Mm-hmm. It's more of like, it's just dark, you know, it's just really like a weird situation to see a character go through and the arc of emotions. And but if you think about like putting yourself in that situation, the more into it you get personally, or the more you're trying to fight with your family and your friends to prove that something's right, the crazier you might seem.
You know,
because you start to get more and more passionate, you know, but in the end, they're going to commit you, you know, it's really fun. My favorite character I've ever gotten to play. It's so different from anything I've gotten to do. And I love it. I love how the film turned out. I'm really, really proud of it. And I hope people check it out because it's really good.
Is that why you kind of wanted to do it? Because it's sort of,
outside of the usual comfort zone or whatever you want to call it. I mean, part of the problem with Hollywood, as we all know, is sort of people tend to get pigeonholed, although you've done a good job of doing a lot of different things. But this definitely, when I was reading about it, did seem more outside the box for you. And was that kind of one of the reasons you wanted to go after this?
To be honest, not necessarily. I mean, I read the script and I just loved the script and I wanted to be a part of it. So I wasn't looking at it like, oh, this would be really good for people to look at me differently. Hey, if in the end they see the movie and they go, wow, I wasn't expecting that. Awesome. You know, that's a win, you know, for me. But in the same sense, like, even if being pigeonholed, like I always say, or being typecast, or really only being remembered as one character, maybe Malcolm or whatnot, I say, I don't mind that. Like, I've never tried to run from it, because it's just cool to have been a part of something that people cared about enough to where they still remember you.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But in that sense, you know, I think I'm most proud of my performance in this more than anything I've ever done, because it really was out of my comfort zone for me, never mind for maybe even the viewer. But I honestly think that 5 minutes into the movie, they're going to forget that I was Malcolm and just see me as a character and go along this intense journey.
Yeah. And did you find that, I mean, I don't know how you work as an actor. Some people create sort of backstories for their characters or do some intense research. Like, did you sort of delve into any of that to get ready for the role? And did you, in doing the role, were there some acting chops that you had to kind of use that you hadn't used a lot before?
Well, to be honest, I've never really been the type of actor that does tons of research. I mean, I never had to, you know what I mean? I've always just kind of been the funny kid, or, you know, you know,
yeah.
I didn't have to do too much research. This, I think the biggest thing that I wanted to make sure that we had kind of declared before we started the movie, the director and I worked on it, was figuring out the level. And what I mean by level is what level of more crazy or passion am I at each scene, or, you know, at each part of the movie, so there can be a progression. Because, you know, you don't film the movie in order. So we filmed one of the craziest scenes first. It was the first thing we filmed. So, like, knowing that that's got to be my craziest, how do we show the arc, and, you know, so you can kind of grow with the character, or, you know, like, see that how it develops. And that was the biggest thing. And once we had that down, like, I found it actually oddly really easy, more than any comedic role I've played or anything like that. Like, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm crazy in real life. It was really easy to be crazy.
well, I got to tell you, I mean, you know, it's really, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because you, and by the way, like, I lived below a phone sex operator, when I first started doing comedy. She worked, she worked for a phone sex company. She was 300 pounds. I'm not joking. And she sold Herbalife diet products door to door, and would make phone calls in her house. Yeah. And she had a big, like, she wore a big dress, and I'm not making fun of people with weight issues. It was what it was. And she had a big button that said, "I'm an herbal lifer. How about you?" And she would do that during the day, and at night she would make calls, and I could hear all her calls, and I knew what she really looked like. So she would call you and say, "Hey, Frankie, I'm like 105 pounds." "Nah, no, you're not. Your arm's 105 pounds." And so, and when you said, you know, you went to the doctor and you had a rash, I thought the doctor would be like, "Well, yeah, you hook up with a phone sex operator. What do you think you would have? Of course you have a rash, right?" Yeah. You want to know how not to have a rash? Stop hooking up with phone sex operators, Frankie. That's what you do.
Exactly. there is an odd amount of comedy, but we're not trying to be funny. But if you picture someone going through a crazy or an episode like this, like, there's going to be parts that are funny, you know, reactions they have or things that they say. And and there are moments in the script that just, I think, came kind of naturally. Like, we weren't going for the comedy, but little lines that were ad-libbed here and there that just are actually really funny. But I love the film. I'm really proud of it. You know, another thing is, like, I auditioned for the film. It's one of the first auditions I've gone on in 20 years or something like that. But I was that passionate about the film and wanting to be a part of it. Like, I'd do whatever I needed to do to win the role. And I'm happy they picked me, because you know, it ended up being an amazing experience. I thought we made a really, really good movie.
That's great. So, you know, when you were acting as a child, you're from New Jersey, and if I have this right, around sixth grade, you started to be homeschooled. Is that because you were focusing a lot on acting? And did you feel like you were, because I have a friend that's homeschooled his kid, and I've always wondered, like, do you feel like you miss out on the social things in school by not being there?
I don't feel like I'm the best example, just because, you know, instead of being at school and going to the prom, like, I was, you know, hosting the Kids' Choice Awards and going to the Emmys and traveling the world.
Poor Frankie. He can't go to the prom. Right. He can't go to the prom because he's on a private jet.
I was at the Playboy Mansion. You know, like, I was living it up. I don't, so in that sense, no, I don't think so. I think that now I don't have kids currently, but I think, like, would I want to homeschool them or put them in school? And I love the idea of homeschool because for me, I mean, I was doing it on set, but say I wasn't filming something and I had to do it on my own. Like, I loved, it taught me to be, like, really self-sufficient, and I could figure out problems on my own. And, you know, you don't have any of, like, that social aspect, but that's also, like, the aspect of school that kids hate, right? With the bullying and you know, the cliques and all that. So I don't know. I think there's good and bad, you know, but I think everyone's circumstance is different when it comes to schooling, but I don't know what I would say, you know?
Yeah.
Kids are crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's, you know, especially at that age, like, it's that people, they, you know, kids are the kind of nice to each other, like, in first, second, third, fourth grade, maybe. And then they start to become a little bit, especially boys, like, you're right.
Yeah, seventh, eighth, ninth grade.
Yeah.
Get ugly, you know?
But, I mean, then again, you're a big star at that point. You had bodyguards. So if a kid tried to bully you, you just have your bodyguard take him out, right? So
I never had bodyguards, but I was Andy Cody Banks.
All right. Okay. So, you know, you've been really into racing, like, and I know this started when with the Toyota Celebrity Race in Long Beach quite a while ago. And what is it about racing? And you've gotten injured, right? You've gotten concussions from racing and stuff. Like, but what is it about that drew you to that?
And to be honest, I was always a fan of racing. But, you know, becoming a race car driver is one of those things where you go, like, you know, every kid goes, I want to be a race car driver or an astronaut. And so that's how you really become a race car driver.
Right.
You know, so, like, it wasn't something I ever thought I would do, but getting to do that Toyota Pro Celebrity Race, which I won in, I think, 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
A pro team approached me after that and said they would love to give me just a test, you know, like a just for fun. But I ended up, I was really, really quick. So they signed me to a 2-year deal, the first year in Formula BMWs, and then moving up to the Champ Car Atlantic Championship. And it became my life. Like, it took over. And, you know, if you want to be successful in racing, you have to dedicate 100% to it. So that's why I kind of put acting on hold for a while and was doing that. But then in 2009, I got in a pretty bad accident. I broke my back, pins in my hand, you know, broken ankle, you know, broke a lot of bones, concussions, all that. So by the time I healed, always thought I would go back to racing. But by the time I healed, because it took a little over a year, I joined a band. And then I was traveling the world playing drums in a band. You know, so I've had a pretty amazingly lucky and fortunate and adventurous life so far. And just trying to keep that going.
Was the band and the race car driving more something that pulled you? Or was it more just, did you feel kind of, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but burned out or sort of just needed a break from acting? What was the thing that drove that, would you say?
I don't necessarily remember, like, the exact decision. I know I wanted to start racing cars. Like, I'd been acting since I was 8 or so. And when Malcolm ended, I was, I think, 20. And I knew I wanted to leave LA. Like, I didn't want to live in LA. I wanted to go live somewhere else for a while. So I moved to Scottsdale, Arizona, where I still live now.
Why did you want to move to LA?
LA, I don't know. It just was, to me, it's like some people love it and some people hate it. I was one of those people, like, it just felt like a really hard place to actually live. Like, to go to the grocery store was difficult because it's packed and it's LA and there's traffic to go. 1 mile takes 30 minutes, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So, you know, where Scottsdale to me was just this, it's still a, Phoenix is the fifth largest city in the country. It's spread out. It's a lot easier of a life. A lot more golf courses, you know, and I thought that's where I wanted to be. So that's where I ended up. But I don't know. It was more, I took advantage of the opportunities that were presented at the time. Like, I didn't say, I want to quit acting and try to become a race car driver. I got signed to that deal and I was like, no, I'm doing this. And if I had to do it, I got to be on the road,
sure,
you know, 200, 300 days a year, training, all that, you know, testing, at the track, mm-hmm, racing. That's what I had to do. So it was more things that took over from the acting, more than me saying, I don't want to be an actor anymore. But then now, like, I've done some acting here and there over the last 10 years, but this is my first movie where I really feel like is like a comeback. You know what I mean? I was really proud of the film, proud of the script, proud of the role, my performance. And it really reinvigorated like this want to create and to make films and do all that again. So I don't know what the future holds, but I can say that this was a positive thing for me because it opened up my eyes to like how much I really did miss it.
That's great. Yeah, no, I can understand that, especially if you start doing anything at the age of 8 for 12 straight years, especially acting and starring and being at the center of a TV show. That's pretty intense. And I did just one last thing before we wrap up. What was that like at 8? Did you feel the pressure of having, I mean, obviously you had an amazing cast around you, but you know, you're Malcolm, right? You're at the center of it. Were you too young to understand the pressure of it? Or did you start to feel pressure later as you got older? Like, oh God, yeah, this whole thing is like kind of around me. Like, what was that like at 8?
I think I was too young to realize. I mean, I was just excited to be filming.
Yeah.
As a kid, you're only allowed to work, you know, 9.5 hours a day or whatever with schooling, and they're really strict about it. Mm-hmm. And I'd be so mad when they would tell me, oh no, you have to wrap because you hit your 9.5 hours. So I would wrap, but I would stay and just watch. You know, I remember that in the first couple seasons, just being so excited to be there. But as far as like pressure, I never really felt pressure. I mean, I feel way more pressure now at 33,
right?
You know, trying to figure out where I'm going, what I'm doing in my life, than I ever felt when I was on the show. You know what I mean? I think it would be different if I was on the show now, you know, knowing how rare it is for shows to find success and to stay on for 7 seasons. You do 150 episodes and you want that, right? You want it to be successful. But I feel like it's harder now than ever because there's just so much content. There's so many shows made and so many networks and streaming services. And it's really hard to get a piece of the audience pie, you know, and I would want obviously to be as successful as possible. So I would feel a lot more pressure, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'm not in that situation.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, I think it's like, yeah, it's like almost in sports, you know, you're not that you're the underdog, but you play loose when you don't feel like there's a lot at stake, or you don't know in the case of maybe an 8 or a 9 year old that there is a lot at stake. You're like, yeah, this is cool. I'm on TV. This probably happens to a lot of people. Like, do a pilot, the show gets picked. Yeah, you know, that's why I said, as you get older, you start to realize, oh man, this is holy crap. This is serious, well, you know, but that's, yeah.
You wonder why, just to bring up the racing again, you wonder why like most of the professional race car drivers, they start out when they're really little kids. And at 16, 17, 18, they're into IndyCar and Formula One, like the top motorsports. They're crazy. They don't even have the thought process that anything can go wrong.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so they just do it.
Yeah.
And the older you get, you start going, ooh, like, I'm starting to get a little achy. I don't want to hit that wall.
Right,
you
right.
That will hurt. Oh, I got kids.
Right, right. Right, right. It's like that. It's like that. I mean, I remember driving around. I grew up in Rhode Island in New England, and I remember, you know, my buddies and I go out, my mother's Oldsmobile, like 16, 17. And we're, you know, no, I'm not promoting this now, but, you know, we were having a few drinks, we're driving, like racing each other. And I look back now, like we were completely fearless and stupid. And I, you know, if I have to go 70 to pass somebody now, I think twice, right? Like with, you know, it's, you're right. It's just sort of like, hey, I'm young. Nothing ever happens to me. I'm indestructible. So you kind of push the envelope until something happens to you.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
You go, ooh, I don't want to go through that again.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that catheter really hurt.
Did you have did I get this right in reading? Right? Did you have 9 concussions?
At least. I mean, those are like
Jesus.
The ones the hospital told me I had.
This is all from racing?
But that was, no, I mean, just growing up, I played every sport. Like, I played football up until eighth grade. And I was still in eighth grade. That's when kids started actually getting kind of a lot bigger. And most kids were like 120, 140, 150 pounds. I weighed in at like 63 pounds. So I was really small, but I was fearless and I'd go for it. But then when I got hit, I got hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So football, you know, playing sports, basketball, baseball, everything. I always wound up hitting my head pretty bad.
Wow. Well, hope, you know, listen, me. Hopefully you won't remember we did this interview and I can have you again on next week and we do the whole thing again and you'll think like it's a new interview.
I probably won't. Got a really bad memory.
Oh, you do? You've had some issues with that? Yeah, that's tough. But you're going to keep racing, it sounds like, right? You're going to keep doing that?
No, I mean, to be honest, I haven't done any racing since 2009. So it's almost 10 years now.
Oh, you stopped. I thought you were still doing it.
I always thought I'd go back into it, but the band thing took over. And
right.
There's a black string a few years ago. And now I own my fiance and I own a olive oil and balsamic vinegar business.
Yeah, I read that.
It doesn't sound like it would be, but it is insane. Like busy and high energy, and we're always running around, and it's awesome. Like it's actually a really fun thing. I never thought I would say I did.
What makes it so crazy and busy and everything? I mean, there's so many strains of olive oil and balsamic vinegar now. Is it just a super competitive business?
Yeah. I mean, well, we source from 14 different countries. We switch hemisphere every 6 months to ensure we have the freshest olive oil there is. We also only accept what's considered ultra premium. So it's the highest standard in the world. So we have the freshest, highest quality olive oil there is on the planet. So that's what kind of really makes us different. But just doing that, we bottle everything. So like me personally, I probably bottled this week a few thousand bottles myself.
Are you serious? That's awesome. Wow.
I mean, it's a good problem to have, but when you can barely keep enough product because you have to continue to make it, and
yeah.
You know, that's kind of what makes it crazy and high energy. It's like right when you think you got caught up, it's like, nope, we just got a massive order. Oh no, you know,
That's great.
It's been amazing, but we're finally kind of getting a good team put together to help us out. And so it's not just me and Paige working us off, but we really love it. And we're we want to be the olive oil king and queen of the United States of America. we're working hard.
Well, I will go when I go, because I'm Italian and that's a big part of my life since I was a kid. When we go buy olive oil, I want to see bottles of you with you and Paige on the label, just sitting there, maybe in like a race drive, put your racing uniform on, just kind of mix all of your lives in one. What, real quick, why did you get into that business? What was it about it that attracted you guys to that?
We were just looking for something to do together. You know, I love business. I always said, like, if I wasn't doing all the other crazy cool things I do, I would be an accountant. Like, I just love numbers and kind of figuring that out. So we were looking for something to do together. And I happened to, you know, jokingly mention this business and she was like, yeah, let's do it. And here we are 2 years later and it's extremely successful and we had no idea, you know, but it's not something that I was super passionate about, but now I've become, now that I know about it, I love educating, you know, customers to come in. I love, you know, talking about it and figuring it out. And I don't know, it's become a huge part of my life. It helped me eat a lot healthier for sure.
Yeah.
We have tons of different flavors and balsamics and, you know, you can make a plain chicken breast and just put some of our flavored olive oils on it and change it every night of the week and it tastes different and be exciting. You know,
that's so awesome.
It's, I really like it now.
Well, you know, I'm going to change your credits now. I'm going to sign off with, you have a new movie out, The Black String. It's on DVD, digital, and on demand. Sounds great. Go see it. I am speaking to Olive Oil King Frankie Muniz. How about that? We're going to get Lou's Golden Globe winner.
It's called Outrageous Olive Oils, okay?
All right. There you go.
Go look,
everybody, go get some olive oil. It sounds like it's really high-end, great stuff. And go check out the movie, The Black String. And really, really great to have you on. I really, really always liked your work and thought you were just a great guy.
Thank you so much.
From looking at you from afar, and
I
was right. And good luck with everything. Good luck with the movie. Good luck with the business. And we'll keep an eye out for you. All right.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. There you go. Frankie Muniz. Need olive oil. He's your man. October 24th to the 27th. Don't forget Off the Hook Comedy Club. Naples, Florida. Go online to get tickets. Or November 1st and 2nd, I will be at Laugh Boston in Boston, Mass. You can go online to get tickets. And thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week, everybody.